Well, up next on Downtown, if we took the time to list all of our next guest's accomplishment in his more than 7 decades in the entertainment business, that would pretty much take our 2 hours of the show this afternoon. But among the highlights, a dozen Emmy Awards, a Grammy Award, the Mark Twain Prize for American Humor, part of two of the most influential shows in television history, Your Show of Shows. He reinvented the or invented the modern sitcom with the Dick Van Dyke Show, the director of a number of movies like The Jerk, Oh God, All of Me, the author of several books, including a couple of his latest, You Say God Bless You for Sneezing and Farting, and his new book, Too Busy to Die, and is also the host and a big part of an upcoming HBO documentary entitled If You're Not in the Obit, Eat Breakfast. And that's what he probably did just a little while ago. Carl Reiner joining us on Downtown. Mr. Reiner, thanks so much for being with us.
Thank you.
I can't wait to see the documentary. It debuts on June 5th at 1 p.m. You've got a remarkable collection of very talented, energetic people in this film. How old were you before you were able to live life one day at a time and not be looking forward constantly?
How old? I don't know. But before we throw kudos about the film, I must mention the fact that my nephew-in-law, he's my nephew-in-law, George Shapiro, who got the idea to do Vital After 90, actually put this thing together. And it's one of the best productions I've ever seen. He came to me because I once said, and as a matter of fact, they named it after something I said in the morning, if you're not in the obits, eat breakfast. You know, I used to check the obits, as most people do in the morning. And I look at them, and I said that, actually. This morning I looked at the obit, and I do it every morning. I say, got you beat, you got me beat, I got you beat. Depending on the age.
Well, so many wonderful people in the film, including your great friend Mel Brooks, Dick Van Dyke, Norman Lear, Betty White. I'm wondering, Mr. Reiner, if the key to longevity might be being your friend.
No, the key to longevity is having to get up, as having something to do after you get up. That's the whole key. Being interested in something, and of course, the genes that give you the health and the wherewithal to be able to continue to function.
Now, I caught a clip of you on the Today Show doing some of your morning workout routine. Pretty impressed with your flexibility. I'm about 3 decades younger, and I don't think I could do that.
No, as a matter of fact, you can. And start doing them at the beginning of that other book, what's it called, 90-something, Carl Reiner at 94 or something. I recommend it highly. I hurt myself when I was about 30 or something. I fell down a flight of stairs, and the therapist says, don't get out of bed until you do these stretches. And for 50 years, I do not get out of bed until I do the stretches. Once you get out of bed, you'll never go back to do them. And as a matter of fact, I fell down a flight of steps a few months ago on my way to do the Conan show, and I picked myself right up, and I said, the reason I didn't hurt myself is that I'm still limber enough, muscles still react.
Your newest book, and you've been a pretty prolific writer over the last few years, the new one is entitled Too Busy to Die, and it's got some reminiscences, some short stories, and I understand the title of that came from your friend Mel Brooks.
Yes, I had just finished a series of bios, one called I Remember Me, the one is I Just Remembered, and the third one was called What I Forgot to Remember. Mel Brooks gave me that title, as a matter of fact, the last one, What I Forgot to Remember. And when I finished it, I said to him, what do I do now? And he said to me, too busy to die, and I wrote a book based on it.
Have you had any more dreams of the late newscaster H.V. Kaltenborn?
Oh, no. Isn't that funny? That was in another book, yeah. I happened to actually meet him on a program once, and he actually said that. Hitler, he says, there's a side of Hitler nobody knew about. He was so kind to his dog. He loved his German Shepherd. There's a picture of him petting his German Shepherd. Couldn't believe it.
Well, you mentioned your...
And I said to him, did he notice? Did Mr. Kaltenborn notice he also killed 6 million Jews in 60,
You mentioned your long-term friendship with Mel Brooks, and you guys met on your show of shows. That show was such a formative part of your life and your career, and it was also such a formative part of so many other people. Was there something about that show that sort of forged all of you for the careers that you
Absolutely.
Ended up in?
Absolutely. There's no question about it. First of all, it was headed by maybe the best comedian that ever lived, Sid Caesar, as a sketch comedian and ad libber of stuff while we're on the air, making more fun that was in this than in the script. And also, the idea of the show being pulled together by Max Liebman, who was probably the only man alive who would have come was able to do a weekly show. And it's only because he was a tamament doing shows, those kind of reviews in the mountains. And he did the people used to come up for 3 week vacations, so he had to have three different shows. So he got the idea that you have to have different shows. And with that, he got the idea that you had to do 39 shows a year. And he got the wherewithal to do it, and he got the writers. As a matter of fact, some of the writers were with him at Tamament.
We're talking with Kyle Reiner here on Downtown. Is it safe to say, and I gather this from reading a number of your books, that your best advisor, the person who gave you the best advice through the years, was your wife, Estelle?
No question about it. From the very beginning, when I came home from the Army, I was a teletypist in the Signal Corps, and I wanted to see if I could still type one day. I went to the cellar, typed up a page, showed it to my wife, and said, "Where'd you get this?" I said, "I wrote it." "Really?" She was surprised. It was a little short story. I went and wrote, every day I wrote, in about a week or three, I wrote 13 short stories. And I figured I'd make a book of short stories. And I gave it to a friend to read, and he thought they were good. He gave it to somebody else. And this guy came to me one day. He said, "I'd like to have lunch with you. I read your stories, think they're very good." And he was, my friend was a textile manufacturer, and he made the, the other guy was, said he was in pocketbooks, and I thought he does buys linings, material for linings for his pocketbooks. He says, no, he's in real pocketbooks from Simon & Schuster. And so I met with him, and he said, these stories are wonderful, but, he says, novels sell better. I remember going home, and I said, he wants me to write a novel. I don't know how to write a novel. I don't have enough words. I said, I only went to Georgetown University for a year during the Army days. And my wife said, in her infinite wisdom, she said, "You have something more important than words. You have feelings." With that, I wrote my first novel, Enter Laughing.
And then you also documented your own life in many ways as a writer on your show of shows in Caesar's Hour. That became a pilot entitled Head of the Family that starred you.
Yeah, right.
And can you tell the story, the great story of what the producer Sheldon Leonard said to you about it?
I will. I've told this so many times, but I love telling it. I wrote, when I was, after the show of shows ended, the review format disappeared until Carol Burnett brought it back years later. And situation comedies were being offered. And again, it was my wife who said, I said, "These are not very good, the ones they were offering me." And she said, "Why don't you write one?" And I remember being on the West Side Drive, Franklin Roosevelt Drive, when I actually spoke to myself. I said, "Ryan, what piece of ground do you stand on that nobody else stands on?" I said, "Well, you live in New Rochelle and you work in New York. Write about that." So I wrote about the home life of and the working life of a writer. And it became the Dick Van, it became Head of the Family, which didn't sell when I made a pilot of it. And I had written 13 episodes, and I figured they were dead. But my agent, who was bothered that gold was lying on his desk, offered them to Sheldon Leonard and Danny Thomas, and they brought me in, and I said, "Fellas," they said they loved the show. I said, "Fellas, I don't want to fail with the same material twice." And Sheldon Leonard said, "You won't fail or get a better actor to play you." That was a good impression of him. And he suggested Dick Van Dyke, and I went to New York, saw him in Bye Bye Birdie, and saw maybe the most talented man that ever existed.
What did you see in Mary Tyler Moore that you knew America would fall in love with?
Well, you know, I've told this story, and it's absolutely true. She walked into my office. I'd seen 23 girls looking for her, looking for Laura Petrie. And I told Sheldon, I said, I don't know what I'm looking for. He said, you'll know when you find her. And one day, after 23 girls, she walks in, and she was reluctant to come. She said she had failed at a couple auditions that week and didn't want to fail again. As soon as she walked through the door, I looked at her. I gave her a piece of paper to read, one of the first lines. She read one word, one line, where have you been, or whatever it was. And I heard what I called a ping in her voice. And I said, wow, this girl's got something. And then, of course, you know, and what was very apparent was that beautiful head of hair with a smile that didn't stop, you know, lips, and then those beautiful legs she stood on. I said, and I realized I'd found her, so I made my hand into a claw like they do at the amusement park. They have these machines that pick up candy. I made my hand into a claw like a shovel. And I grabbed the top of her head, and I said, come with me. I walked her across the hall and took her to Sheldon Leonard's office, opened my claw, and I dropped her. He said, I found her to her right. That was the meeting with Mary.
You did a number of movies with Steve Martin. Don't you think it's a little unfair that that guy is so talented in so many different areas?
Yeah, man. Steve is really a genius. He got an AFI award, and all the people who come to talk about him were talking about different aspects of his talent. First of all, as a writer, I don't think there's a better autobiography written than Born Standing Up. It's exquisite. If you haven't read it, it's as good as any you'll ever read. Plus the fact he's more knowledgeable about art than most people, than his curators go to him to talk about art. He owned art. He knows collectors. He has so many interests that, you know, it's very funny thing is, he called me one day, not too long ago, and he said, tell Dick Van Dyke that I think he's the single most talented man who ever lived in show business. And I told Dick, that's true, you know, Dick can do anything. But those two guys in different areas are the best. And that was one of the misfortunes of my life, to work with those two guys.
What was the genesis of that collaboration with Steve Martin? Because you guys did a series of movies together.
Well, we had so much fun doing The Jerk that we immediately started thinking about what else to do. And we came up with a couple, The Man with Two Brains and the big one that I adored was Dead Men Don't Wear Plaid. I had more fun doing that. That was a labor of love, absolutely labor of love.
You've written so many books in recent years, and they're all wonderful collections of stories, everything from stories to reminiscences to even a play, I just remembered. Is that just on memory, or have you kept a journal through the years?
No, I don't. It's in my head. There are things that I've done that make me very excited. One of them is I wrote a play once called Something Different. Something popped into my head. Oh, I know what it was. This was really crazy. I was doing television at the time, and we're off for the summer. Dick Van Dyke was doing a series or something. What was it? I forget who. And I had nothing to write. And my secretary said, we have nothing to type. She always used to retype my bad typing. So I wrote a page or something. I handed it to her. She typed it up, and she started to giggle. I said, what are you giggling? I said, it's funny. The next few days, wrote a few more pages. And within 6 weeks, I had written a show called Something Different. And within 3 months, it was on Broadway. It was one of the funniest things I've ever written.
You are very active and a wonderful follow on Twitter. Not everybody's out there on social media. What was it about that platform that attracted you as a way to express your thoughts on what's happening in our country?
I don't know. I think it started with having to say something true about Trump. I don't know what started it, but I thought it was there. I like, before going to bed every night, I tweet something, and I get fun doing it. And a lot of feedback, an awful lot of feedback these days, especially my anti-Trumpism.
Well, I think the two leaders in the clubhouse for that are you and the owner of our station, Stephen King.
Oh, really? Yes, that's right.
He is a pretty vocal critic as well. I have to ask you, Mr. Reiner, because you've also, with your friend Mel Brooks, you've been on kind of a personal mission, from what I understand. Have you removed all of the chicken feathers from those pillows in your home?
Oh, no. As a matter of fact, I did some last night. I can only do it if people visit me and sit on the couch and lean against it and mush them around a little. It takes a little doing, and it's a therapeutic. I really think it's kept me alive.
Mr. Reiner, it's such a thrill for us. Thank you so much. I can't wait to see the film next week. We wish you continued good health and success, and appreciate you being with us today.
Thank you.